4. On Parnassos, 12 years ago. The story begins with a teen girl named Siv. She was part of a band of about 50 loosely related people who lived in a territory on Parnassos they called the Skyre. Although the Skyre folk knew that their planet had once been rich with life and flourishing with technology, they also knew that some great cataclysm had befallen it, leaving them with an increasingly uninhabitable environment. The Skyre was ruled by the swiftly encroaching sea on one side and an unknown wasteland of jagged stone spires on the other. For Siv and her people, the only ground was rock, and food and water were always scarce. They ate mostly dried sea vegetables and meat, salty creatures from tide pools or dead things washed up against the rocks, or sometimes the screeching birds that cleverly hid their roosts and eggs. Every now and then, some remnant of civilization would wash up against the pitted black cliffs, an old data pad or a bit of recyclamesh that they hoarded. But they had lost written language, and so all they could do was save what they could and hope that they would one day find the peace and comfort their ancestors had known. Siv said their greatest boon was an ancient cave, the Nautilus, which had once been dry and safe but was now flooded by the sea most of the time. Once every few days, the tide would go out, and the Skyre folk could find succor in their cavern, resting and holding rituals and tending to their accumulated collection of broken tech, weapons, and human remains carefully stowed in hidden tunnels. The Nautilus was the reason the Skyre folk so fiercely defended their territory, for all that the cruel sea and neighboring bands encroached on their home. In a dangerous world, the Nautilus felt safe. And then, one night, something terrible happened. It started with a cry, and Siv jerked awake, ready to fight. She was young then, around 16, and already considered a deadly warrior. Leaping to her feet with a blade in her hand, eyes adjusting to the darkness, she scanned the cave for threats. Their entire band had been sleeping peacefully on pallets around a fire in the center of the cave, just under the hole in the ceiling that led back out to the cliffs. As a young, healthy person, Siv's sleeping place was far from the fire's warmth and light, but she easily found the source of the scream. Their leader, Ejil, lay closest to the fire, gasping for breath. A younger man, Hor, loomed over the graying warrior. Hor's blade dripped blood, and his well-armed friends stood by him, grinning with menace.
"Ejil is dead,"
Hor shouted, hefting his blade, a crude thing made from a rusty saw.
"He was too old to rule, and growing slower by the day. I will lead you now. Siv, bring the detractors, and extract his essence so that even in death, he will protect our people."
Siv looked down at the bag she carried with her always, before glancing around the room to see how the rest of her band felt about the power shift. She immediately understood the situation, saw that her friends were moving into position, and knew she had to buy time. "Ejil is not dead. I will only use the detractors when there is no more hope. You know that."
"He will be dead shortly. Come here and prepare them, or better yet, teach me to use them. As the new leader, I will take over the ritual."
At that, Siv picked up her second blade and went into a crouch. She wasn't a large woman, but she was known for being a good, quick fighter, with her two curved scythes made from old, sharpened agricultural implements. The well-kept silver flashed in the low light of the fire, and she bared her teeth. "Detraxing is a holy ritual passed down through my mother, as I will one day pass it down to my daughter," she told Poor. "You can't simply use the machines on a body and move on. You must care for them, oil them, and offer the proper prayers as you withdraw the essence and craft the oracle salve. Without the detraxors, without the salve to protect our skin and heal our wounds, our entire band will die. A good leader understands such things." Por sneered and took a step toward her. He'd always been a bully, and Siv would die before giving up the detractors to him. Fortunately, she wouldn't have to choose. The plan she'd seen beginning was coming to fruition, and a young man named Keldo spoke out from the crowd.
Por, this is not our way. Killing the leader is forbidden unless both parties agree to combat.
Everyone turned to look down at the speaker. Most of the band stood now, but Keldo remained on the ground. He'd lost the lower part of one of his legs as a child, and although he was tough enough to survive in the Skyre, he was now known for his wise counsel and clever ideas. Por laughed mockingly.
Oh, and you're going to stop me?
In the silence that followed, a strong voice filled the Nautilus. But it wasn't Keldo.
I will stop you.
A tall figure in full battle regalia stepped before the murdering usurper. It was Keldo's sister, Phasma. Over 2 meters tall, Phasma drew every eye. She wore her war mask, a rust-red terror of hardened pinniped skin painted with black slashes and surrounded by scavenged feathers and fur. The eye holes were covered in fine mesh salvaged from a wreck, making Phasma seem less like a human and more like a nightmare monster. Climbing claws tipped her gloves and boots to help her navigate the rocks and spires outside or fight any rival warbands. And now, she faced Por in her heavily wrapped leathers, mask, and spikes, while he wore only sleeping clothes. He had planned his raid for the time when Phasma was outside on guard duty, but he had made a fatal miscalculation. Beside her, Por looked small and weak.
Stay out of this, Phasma. Your brother is worth nothing to the group, and you know it. Now that I rule, you will be my deputy, but you must submit to me first.
Phasma shook her head.
You will never rule me.
As if in agreement, a circle of warriors stepped forward to join her. Even in their sleeping clothes, they had a lethal edge. These young fighters were loyal to Phasma and ready to mete out justice as she commanded. Siv was among them, and she first nudged her detractor bag toward Keldo with a grateful smile, knowing he would keep the vital equipment safe. As she moved into position, the light of the fire flashed off her dark skin, and she was glad she'd tied back her long dreadlocks with a piece of leather so that she could fight more nimbly. Nearest Siv was Torben, a big man with a bushy brown mane and beard, tan skin, and light green eyes. He was good-natured and smiling, even with his spiked club and huge axe in hand, the tallest and broadest man among the Skyre, and always ready for a fight. His best friend Carr stood beside him, a lanky, quick-witted man with golden skin, sun-bleached hair, and freckles. Carr had the best aim when throwing blades and was always ready with a joke, but for now he was serious and held 2 knives by their tips, his eyes scanning the room for anyone who might stand against Phasma. On Siv's other side was Gosta, an agile, quick girl who could dart in to disembowel an enemy and dance out of range before her victim began to fall. Stocky, but all muscle, with medium brown skin and curly black hair, she was just a few years younger than Phasma and looked up to her like she was a goddess reborn.
I can't wait to sink a knife into Por's toadies,
Gosta murmured. She was the only girl her age, just past becoming a woman, and Siv had noticed Por and his friends watching Gosta in a way that Egil should have addressed. For all that Siv hated Por, she knew that one thing was true. Egil was too old and weak to lead. Not that he deserved his current end, bleeding out on the floor of the Nautilus, staining the worn floor with yet more blood. Few people lived past 35 in the Skyre, and Egil had to be over 40. He was getting slow, and everyone knew it. The helpless among the Skyre folk melted back to stand against the walls of the cave. That was part of life in the Skyre. If you couldn't fight, you quickly found a way to contribute to the group by scavenging food, water, or clothing, and you got out of the way of the fighting, or died where you stood.
Por and Phasma circled each other, their warriors fanning out, weapons at the ready. Por struck first, hacking at Phasma with his long blade, a dagger in his other hand. She was taller and dressed to fight, but Por was older, more muscular, and more desperate. Phasma parried the slash with her spear, a rough thing made entirely of metal with a bladed tip. Siv had one eye on the fight, and one eye on Por's minions, who weren't as tough or well-trained as their leader. Phasma taught her warriors personally, sparring with them daily, and challenging them to learn every weapon and remain constantly vigilant. They followed her not because she asked them to, but because she had her own gravity, a greatness and courage that spoke to their hearts. But Por demanded only attention and flattery from his followers, and so they hung back, waiting for a sign from Por instead of wading in to fight and turn the tide in his favor. Por was quick with his blades, following up a slash from the right with a backhand from the left. But Phasma knew his moves, having trained with him for years under Aegil. Every eye in the Nautilus watched Por and Phasma hacking and slashing and parrying and grunting. Life was hard on Parnassos, and most fights were raids from rival bands, when even those who couldn't fight had to take up arms and defend the land. It was rare to watch two warriors battle, especially when it wasn't life and death for the band. It was beautiful, Siv recalled, watching how easily Phasma fought off Por's attacks. Siv quickly realized that although Phasma could have destroyed him easily, the warrior was holding back. And then she saw why. Por screamed and fell to the ground, but it wasn't Phasma's blade that had struck him. It was Keldo's. While everyone had watched Por's face, Phasma's mask, and the flashing weapons in their hands, Keldo had crawled across the floor with his own knife and sliced the tendons of Por's ankles, permanently hobbling him. By the time Por understood what had happened, Keldo had backed out of reach, and Phasma had her spear pointed at Por's throat.
"You have broken our greatest law," Keldo said. "We do not raise weapons against our own people, and now you must be punished. You may serve the Skyre with your hands and mind, as I do, or you can serve by contributing the protection of your essence to the people. What is your choice?" Por was panting now, his eyes wide and round as he tried to stand and failed.
"Fight for me!"
he screamed at his warriors.
"Don't let them win!"
But Por's toadies found themselves trapped by the blades of Phasma's warriors, and they did nothing to help their once friend.
"You heard, Keldo," Phasma said. "Choose."
"You can't make me,"
Por bleated, and Phasma's warriors laughed, a harsh sound echoing off the walls of the cave.
"Oh, she can make you, mate," Carr said. "Either way, you're not gonna like it."
"I'll help,"
Por said.
"Just please, don't kill me. Bring the healer. It can be fixed."
Keldo shook his head sadly. He was the only one on the ground with Por, but his strength, confidence, and dignity radiated, while Por shivered and bled and blubbered. Keldo was only a year older than Phasma, but Siv had long known that he would make a great leader.
"We accept your surrender, but you know such wounds never heal," Keldo said. "Phasma and I will rule now. You must find your own way to contribute. Anyone else who wishes to challenge us may come forward and be treated the same as Por. That is, fairly and according to the law."
Por's threat neutralized, Phasma turned to face the people of the Skyre as they crowded against the cave walls. Even through her mask, it was as if she met every person's eyes, her spear held aggressively forward.
"Then we are the Skyre now," Keldo said.
"Skyre! Skyre! Skyre!"
the people chanted, starting with a whisper and building to thunder. Phasma's attention landed on her warriors, and she gave them the nod that meant she was pleased with their performance.
"Siv, the Detraxers," she murmured.
Siv fetched her bag from where Keldo had stashed it and hurried to Aegil's body. Even dead, every person contributed.
"Thank you for serving us, Ijil," she said. "Your today protects my people's tomorrow. Body to body, dust to dust."
The prayer said, she removed the machine from her bag. The bulb, tubes, and needle-like siphon were already fitted with a fresh leather skin, ready to collect the nutrients from Ijil's body, without which the Skyr folk would become diseased and weak. Siv used this essence to create an oily substance called Oracle Salve, which served many uses. Most important, when applied to the skin, it served as protection from the rain, sun, and many diseases. A different formulation created a liniment that helped wounds heal. For Siv, this process wasn't harsh or cruel or strange. It was the closest thing she had to a religion, and one day it would be her own turn to contribute. Ijil was gone now. The graying leaders she'd once looked up to had faded away sometime during the fight. When the Detraxer had done its work, she stood carefully and carried the full leather skin to where Phasma stood, holding her brother up with one arm. Siv gave the skin to Kelda with a slight bow, and he hefted it.
"For the Skyr!"
he shouted, and the people cheered. The Skyr had new leaders, and though they were young, they were strong. But they still didn't truly understand Phasma. Not yet.